Welcome to the GoTo Podcast. Each episode covers the brightest and boldest ideas from the world's leading experts in software development. Tune in for practical lessons, compelling theories, and plenty of inspiration. GoTo gathers the brightest minds in the software community to help developers tackle projects today, plan for tomorrow, and create a better future. Stay up to date with the latest in tech through GoTo's top-rated events held online and in person in cities like Amsterdam, London, Copenhagen, and Chicago, and by subscribing to the GoTo Conferences YouTube channel, where you can find thousands more high-quality dev talks. Learn more at gotopia.tech.
Hello and welcome all to another episode of GoTo Book Club. I'm Prasad Rao, author of book Cloud Career Journeys. And today we have David with us. David, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Dave Linthicum, it's great to be here, number one. I think your book was absolutely amazing and enjoyed talking to you about it. And I've been in the industry for probably 35 years, last 20 years in cloud. Architect by trade, pretty much have held different technology executive roles. My last one was Chief Cloud Security Officer at Deloitte for about 6 years. Prior to that, I was worked with a company called Cloud Technology Partners, one of the original employees. And prior to that, I was CEO a few times and then CTO four times, different companies that I joined and sold. So out as an independent influencer, analyst now, and just having a good time talking to guys like you.
Cool. And today we'll be talking about your book, Insider's Guide to Cloud Computing. So tell me, like, you know, what inspired you to write this book and share your insider knowledge about the cloud computing?
Because a lot of people told me I should write a book when they would hire me as an influencer, consultant, things like that. My persona is to tell the truth and tell them when cloud would work and cloud wouldn't work and why you would want to use it and why you wouldn't want to use it. So never was a shill for any kind of technology, including cloud. So somebody told me, I said, well, you need to write a book about the insider information on this stuff because no one's saying this stuff. So took all the years of experience in cloud computing as a cloud architect and those sorts of things and jotted them down in an insider's book that kind of gets to the back end details that no one was able to or wanted to talk about. And everybody was pretty much gung-ho cloud, which is fine, but there's reasons to use it and reasons not to use it. And I think that even the cloud providers agree that they want people to use it in successful ways. And the way and patterns people are leveraging cloud these days is not so much. In 2022, we got the big bills. People moved and lifted and shifted into the cloud, weren't really paying attention to the optimization of the applications. In that environment, now we're quickly trying to replatform and redo and modernize those systems to lower the bills and optimize those systems. I think I heard the optimize word from the cloud providers last year for the first time. I think they're all in on making these things happen, the rise of FinOps, all these sorts of things. So it really is getting into, we're well past 10 years of cloud computing, making this stuff work, figure out where it's a good value and where it's not a good value. And I think people are ready for that message. And that's why I wrote the book.
Awesome. And we'll dive deep more into the book. But before that, like, you are a best-selling author, you are a course instructor, keynote speaker, and you do like many more things. Like, you've authored 15 books in probably more than 7,000 articles. So apart from all your professional that you have, like, how do you find time for writing and like maintaining the discipline among so many other things?
Well, it's part of, it's just part of a daily ritual. In other words, if you do something for a month at a time, you force yourself to do it every day, whether it's exercise or reading a book or doing yoga or whatever, it creates a habit and you're going to kind of stick to the habit. I realized early on when I was in my 20s that I had to differentiate myself somehow. Didn't have an Ivy League degree. Didn't go to MIT, went to a normal college. And if I was going to accelerate my career, I needed to present myself as a thought leader in the space. And so started to write articles for local consulting journals and, you know, user groups, things like that. And some magazines picked it up. And that was the only way to get something published back in the 90s and the 80s was get into a magazine. Started writing for PC Magazine. And it kind of steamrolled after that. It was a nice side gig, but also it was symbiotic with my job. In other words, I had to keep up with technology to write about it. So it was the way to learn in a faster way, to force myself to learn. And I could bring that knowledge into my role as an architect. So all of these things kind of work and play all together. So I learned early on to get up early, write 2,000 words. I write about 2,000 words a day, whether it's my InfoWorld blog or my book, or, you know, even show notes for the video I'm doing later. And I enjoy it. And it's funny. I did not enjoy it when I first started. It was drudgery to me. I just figured out I needed to do it to accelerate my career. So I forced myself to do it. Now it's something I really enjoy, right? I always looked forward to writing my InfoWorld blog every week just because it's a new idea. And it's a challenge to see what I can put out there that's going to get the most interest. You know, now that we have different multimedia facets, such as podcasting, making sure the podcasts get out there, and also videos and all these sorts of things that are new media to us. And it's just amazing and empowering to me that anybody in the world can sit down and write a blog, get a Substack account or a Blogger account, probably dating myself, or publish on LinkedIn, and anybody can read it. And so it's not like in the days back when I was writing for PC Magazine, only I could write for PC Magazine and the other writers. So it was a very limited world. Now it's explosion. So I just enjoy the freedom of it. I enjoy the fact I can get ideas out there without them being edited. So to me, it's just an empowering thing that makes me feel great. Just like you guys in writing your book. I'm sure you had some days where you didn't want to write, but you did it anyway, and you have to have a discipline of going back and keeping writing.
But 2,000 words a day, that's like amazing and very impressive, and probably a note to everyone in their 20s who are not from a big college, right? That's a great tip there, how you can actually make yourself stand out. So thanks for sharing it. Now let's dive deep into the book. And you mentioned that there are many secrets in cloud computing industry that can help enterprises succeed. Do you want to talk some of them and some secrets or misconceptions that companies should be aware of?
Sure. I think the biggest one that people are surprised about, that in many instances, cloud native systems, containers and Kubernetes, things like that, are going to be not necessarily a requirement for all applications. And so, which is almost a religion out there, to move in those directions and to take existing applications and write new applications in containerizing and Kubernetes. I built hundreds of architectures that way, and it's great technology, but it shouldn't always be used. And there's something called a container tax that comes along with doing that, because you need more expensive people, you need more time, it's operated in a different way. And you have to account for that complexity when you build those systems. And I think that revealing that was something that was eye-opening for lots of folks, because I just wanted them to evaluate the use case that they're solving when they move into containers. Same thing with AI. I've been an AI developer since I was 18. I worked with M1 and Lisp, and taught as a young college professor back in the day, and watched the whole thing generate over time. We had the same problem back then we may be having now. It's overuse. In other words, we're trying to apply it in different problem domains. You got to remember in the 80s, there was a big boom in AI. People were, you know, buying the Borland tools, things like that, at the local bookstores. Well, I'm sure it's well before your time. And it was overused. People were using it to write business applications and transaction applications. Now, the AI back then was not as capable as it is now. It's multitudes of power, but the ability to pick the right use cases to apply that technology is something that I don't think we understand right now. Every generative AI is cheap, it's available. You can use it in the cloud fairly easy. You can become a generative AI developer in a couple of days. And however, you can also reuse it, and you're going to find that it's very expensive. Leverage is very expensive processing that burns a lot of power. GPUs are great, but they actually need a processor themselves to run. So they take a lot more power to run. And so it's just really kind of looking at this with a pragmatic eye and not getting us into trouble, which I think we're getting into right now in a few years' time, when we realize that these applications should not have been written in that particular technology. Also, and the big thing was in chapter one, I talk about finding the value of cloud computing. And also admitting to the fact it never was CapEx versus OpEx. That never was the way to define the value of cloud computing. If you're not able to define agility as kind of a core critical value, a hard value and a soft value of cloud computing, normally it's not going to have a good business case for cloud computing, and applications should be moving in those areas. So the ability to get people to understand that they're not going to save more costs than cloud costs. In other words, clouds are very expensive relative to the on-premise systems, and that's because they have come down in price a great deal. But there's reasons to use it. And if you put a lot of value on agility and the ability to speed the market, integration with various systems, for example, we're building an AI system and we need access to data tooling and technology that's important to us for this aspect. That's going to be a business case for using the cloud, but it's also a business case for not using the cloud. If the cloud's going to be, if the application's isolated, it does very simplistic things, uses massive amounts of data storage that are isolated unto themselves. And a lot of applications are like that. They're very monolithic. Then leave it on-premise in many instances is going to be your best bet. That doesn't mean you can't move it to the cloud in the future as the capabilities change, but that's something should be looked at on a case-by-case basis. The other thing is everybody predicted the death of the mainframe. Those things are still around. So hugely powerful processors. They measure their memory in terabytes, which tells you how big they are. And there's reasons to use those sorts of big iron systems. And in many instances, the cloud's not going to displace the applications that are running on there. It may in the future, and you can certainly find mainframe analogs on the cloud, and I've built systems like that, but it's not necessarily an efficient process, and it's not going to get you to a better state. So it's having people step back and look at the cloud industry for what it is, something can have potential, do a lot of potential good, and something that we can make a lot of mistakes in. So your ability to avoid mistakes, pick the right use cases, use cloud to a fundamental value is going to help everybody. It's going to help the cloud providers. It's going to help AWS, Microsoft, Google. It's going to help the consultants out there. And the big thing is going to help the enterprises that are consuming this stuff and trying to run the budgets.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that chapter was really insightful when I was reading it. It's no one says in that specific terms that it never was about CapEx and OpEx. It's always about the value. So yeah, great way to put it actually. Now, you also talk about two types of organizations. One, you know, that they know that they are overspending, and other that they know that they are doing it right. How can the companies transition from that first category to the second category?
Just really get good at planning. I mean, it's not a, I don't think it's a lot of rocket science or an algorithm I can give you so you do this better. It's just do additional planning before you start moving into these areas. And we're seeing this lack of planning that's occurring now in the movement to generative AI. So why are you doing it? What's the business case? How are you leveraging the technology? How are you going to operate it? How are you going to deal with complexity of operations? Your hiring patterns, the skills changes that you need, all these sorts of things should be known as you get in there. And all this stuff with many organizations, probably 80% of the organizations out there, it's a big surprise. In other words, they realize that they can't find a lot of cloud talent because there's a scarcity of cloud talent out there, good ones. There's not enough people like yourself out there looking for jobs. And therefore, they find it a tougher path to go down, much more expensive. And they're not really seeing the benefits there when that should have been on the radar screen early on. They should have made decisions around application workloads and data sets that are going to be aligned better to what the business is able to do and aligned to the use of cloud computing. So planning is not an exciting thing to do. You're going to have to, you know, figure out where your data is, figure out who owns it, figure out performance characteristics, figure out cost and budget characteristics, all these sorts of things that architects are supposed to be doing. But come up with a solution, both a macro solution, in other words, the solution for the entire enterprise, and the micro solution, solutions for the particular systems that are there, they're going to be the best logical conclusion to return the most value back to the business. And I state that probably 100 times in the book. We're measured in our ability to leverage cloud computing successfully, their ability to return the maximum amount of value back to the business. We're not looking at that at metric. We're going to go off kilter each and every time. So it's the duh answer. You know, do some planning, you know, do your budgeting, make sure you understand the cost, do your due diligence before you move any of these systems into the cloud, and then you'll be part of the team that the business that does it right. And that's probably 20% of the enterprises out there are leveraging cloud, are able to do it kind of right. 80% don't. And they're bleeding money, they're hurting their business, they're pushing resources off in areas that are going to be less productive. And now that we're moving into the whole generative AI in your way in the cloud, then those sorts of things are going to be business killing. They're going to spend money that probably could take down the business. And also the business could be missing out on a key innovative differentiator that could change the business and actually become the business. So the stakes are way higher now. And so I'm telling people, you don't do this planning, you don't do this architecture, you're going to run into these walls and you're going to kill your business. And I'm seeing it happen right in front of my eyes, by the way. You're going to see not necessarily bankruptcies, but lots of businesses get sold or absorbed into other companies. And when you figure out to a postmortem on why what happened, they had a weakness in their business because they weren't spending their IT dollars in areas that were to a strategic benefit for them. The competitors did. They were able to build generative AI systems in the cloud or not in the cloud that were able to provide a key differentiator for them, where they provide better supply chain, better customer experience, able to do things cheaper. You know, all these things that businesses are able to do, a la Uber and Netflix, things like that. And they're just going to basically dominate and kill the business. You remember Netflix and Blockbuster. I mean, that's the best analog I could think about there. So you want to be Netflix, you don't want to be Blockbuster.
Yeah, continuous innovation is important and cost should always align with revenue. That's what we also mentioned. You know, when you're thinking about doing something, think about, you know, whether the cost is going to help you with the business case, with the revenue, or it's just, you know, like burning money.
Don't burn money.
Yeah. Yeah. So talking about multi-cloud, like you have a full section in the book about multi-cloud strategies and in-depth, you know, discussion about the multi-cloud upsides and downsides. Would you like to share a few insights about that?
Yeah. It's normally going to happen to you, whether you want it to happen to you or not. Everybody I talk to, they always tell me, they're using AWS as a primary provider. They're not going to support multi-cloud, but they're always going to have every one of those has moved into multi-cloud environments. And that's because of best of breed systems that may not exist in a particular cloud. So in other words, we're primary cloud providers, AWS. We find most of their stuff where you're able to use in AWS. We may need to use an AI system, however, that only Microsoft hosts for some sort of a special business reason. And so they're a multi-cloud. So it happens to everybody organically. Normally, it's not planned. They're not, you know, stating we're going to definitely go to multi-cloud. Different pods of developers are making decisions around what best of breed technology to make, and they're in power to pick whatever cloud providers that they want normally, and they should be. They should be able to use the most, the best of breed technology that are fit for their purpose, and that's going to return the most value back to the business. Again, that metric again. So multi-cloud is going to happen to you whether you like it or not. So you might as well figure out how to manage it correctly. And even if you're normally you're going to have an on-premise infrastructure, some edge-based computing, and you're going to support at least three cloud providers. If not now, it's going to be in the future. And I guarantee if you don't think you're there now, you are. Somebody else is leveraging another cloud. You're leveraging SaaS providers like Salesforce, things like that. So if that's the case, then how do you approach the operations of it? We have a complexity problem. We went from managing, you know, 3,000 cloud services under management to 9,000 cloud services under management. And we're using these in different patterns and by different providers and different operational queues. So we can create silos around the clouds. We can go, I'm going to use the AWS security system, AWS operations, AWS governance, and same with Microsoft and same with Google. That's not going to scale because you have to have people who are able to maintain this, people who are able to maintain this, people who are able to maintain this. Normally, they're not communicating one to another, and you're doing everything in a siloed approach. And certainly the on-premise system, same thing. So the ability to look at a whole super cloud, meta cloud infrastructure, which all it is saying it's a fancy marketing word for saying that we're going to put a layer of technology, security, operations, development, all those sorts of things are able to run across clouds. That's all it is. And even on-premise, I recommend you also extend this to the on-premise system. So we're dealing with security in the same way. Now, we may be leveraging native security as the APIs underneath the scenes that are doing these things, but we're not dealing with different layers and doing it. We're doing security in one layer. We're doing governance in one layer, operations in one layer, metadata management in one layer, as much as possible. So the ability to move those systems up to a common set of common services is the only way you're going to be able to do it. So I write about that in the book. I even have a course out on LinkedIn Learning called Cloud Complexity Management, which shows you how to, you know, build in essence a meta cloud, super cloud, longest course I've ever done, 3 hours. And it's getting people thinking about how they're managing these multi-cloud solutions. Right now, they're throwing away money. Everybody who's running a multi-cloud out there, I guarantee you they're operating it in silos. Different people are operating at different specialties, things like that. They're paying too much for managing those cloud systems. They're not getting the same amount of value back to it. It's overly complex, very heterogeneous. So you're going to have to mediate that complexity somehow. So that's my core message in the book. And I even tell you how to do it.
Yeah, yeah. So you touched upon all of these points in the book in quite detail, actually. And you mentioned also about the security, right? Like every cloud provider has their own set of security tools. So any specific like tips that you would be having for organizations to how they can manage security across all the cloud platforms they are on and they're on-prem instead of using the native security tools?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it is the ability to use security managers that are able to operate across clouds. And we're seeing some tools from IBM and Splunk and all these sorts of things. We're able to, it's not going to be one tool that's going to provide a unified layer. It's going to be different tools and technologies that are using whatever native APIs that security providers have on-premise, Google, Microsoft, AWS, and whatever micro cloud you may have in place. And the idea is to pick that layer, but don't necessarily focus on a technology or a tool set, but understand logically what you're trying to do, because that layer is going to change a lot over time. But the ability to pull up as much as you can to a common layer, and some of that stuff is still going to have to exist in a silo. We live in a practical world, but the layer that's able to use security managers that are able to use the native APIs to control the security on each of those platforms. So in other words, to the platform, they're being monitored, they're being secured, their SecOps is going on, and they're getting the security services they think they need. But to the humans that are managing it, we're not doing so with different dashboards, different consoles, and different processes. We're doing so with a single set of tools where the orchestration, the automation, the AI capabilities, all those sorts of things exist in this layer. So It's an old architectural trick. In other words, as soon as we got into multiple systems, distributed systems, the layer of commonality was something that we always wanted to do as an architecture. We just lost track of it because the clouds unto themselves kind of became silos of automation unto themselves. And the cloud providers don't tell you to use these tools. They want you to use their tools. But in using these tools, we'll actually consume more cloud. They'll make more money. But the technology started to rise out there, ops, security, governance, metadata management, all these sorts of things. And, you know, it has a name. It's called SuperCloud. I call it MetaCloud, but, you know, whatever you want to call it, it's a common layer that runs between the cloud providers and also extends out to the on-premise systems as well.
Now, these terminologies can be a bit overwhelming. And you know, like touched upon that also in the book for the companies who are starting their journey. So what advice would you give for someone who is there? A company who is thinking about making the move into cloud?
Yeah, I would say understand your own business reasons for doing so, which is a tough thing to do. Most people, and it certainly was the case back in 2000 to 2011, they would call you in to do a consultation on moving into cloud without an understanding of what purpose they were doing it. And that was a question that I asked off, first of all. In other words, why are you doing it? What reason are you looking to move into the cloud? And normally you get a lot of blank stares. You know, here we are in 2024, those blank stares still exist. So there should be a reason or a purpose for doing it. And that translates into a plan, that translates into a budget and a business case. And once we get through that, then we can figure out the path to incrementally move into the cloud. And I don't believe that every company should have every system in the cloud. Some of the smaller companies out there, they believe they can save money. Sometimes they can, sometimes they can't. So we have to look at the plethora of platforms out there to make sure they're making the best choice. What happens to the cloud use business case over the last 10 years? Price of storage and the price of processing on on-premise systems just came down like a rocket. It's a 45-degree angle. You can Google the graphs out there. HDD storage, for example, it's just dirt cheap. It's almost free. So if we're leveraging the cloud, that's the alternative to leverage some of these on-premise systems. So it has to be some sort of a compelling reason to leverage a cloud. And you already talked about a few of them. Are we able to find the soft values into the cloud? In other words, the ability to find agility, find business benefits, the ability to have things change on a dime, the ability to use an ecosystem. What's your reasons you want to use things in the cloud? It's easier to build AI systems in the cloud, for example. However, most of the applications I see out there are monolithic. The data is tightly coupled to the application. And there's not going to be a business benefit from them moving into the cloud unless they make significant changes to that application. And if they don't, then it's going to cost them a lot more money. So it's going through these very simple, I think, almost commonsensical, you know, kind of questions that businesses need to ask themselves. There's just so much hype and so much marketing aligned with the cloud. People love going to reInvent. It's like Woodstock for cloud geeks, and I do too. But you got to come out of there with a pragmatic understanding of how it works for you, not how it works on stage at the keynotes, but how it's going to work in your organization for the purposes that you're making. And those are the tougher questions. And I hate being the designated buzzkill, but I think someone has to ask the questions.
No, and you raised quite right points, right? Like, there are so many services. Which one would you leverage and why? And how would you do it optimally, right? That's the main thing. If you're going to simply lift and shift, obviously your cost is going to arise, but how are you able to actually use it? And as you said, optimization is something that you hear more and more now in the cloud world, along with the modernization that is happening for, you know, benefit. And as you said, everyone benefits. And you mentioned that multiple times that if you do it in the right way, everyone benefits across the board. But, you know, and you touched upon this, that there's a cloud talent, right? It's not easy to find the right talent. So how should organizations prepare, you know, for the skills and the processes for this whole cloud native world?
Yeah, give yourself at least a year to ramp up, because it's going to take you that long to figure out how to either reskill your existing personnel. In other words, we're sending them to training or we're training them in-house. Lots of good ways to do that now with all the great on-demand training that exists. Also, who you're going to hire. And so you're going to get to the skill sets that are going to make you successful. And you're planning this not after you deploy your system and you started developing it, but before you start moving it. A lot of people, they'll come out with their budget and they say, okay, we got $10 million to build this system and let's start building it. And if they don't have the skills in-house, it's not going to be a good thing. You're going to make a lot of mistakes that have to be redone and rethought as the higher skilled people come onto the board. So splurge on hiring the right talent, certainly a cloud architect, security and security architecture, cloud engineers, AI architects, AI engineers, data scientists, all these sorts of things that have modern skills that are able to make the good decisions for you and understand your current requirements and map them into a solution. And I think that people underestimate how long that's going to take, and also they underestimate how much they need to pay. So you can find those people out there. They're not cheap. If you're building that talent in-house, make sure you're also, as you're upskilling them, you're also upskill their pay or else they'll leave. So there has to be a retention system in there. There has to be, you have to make your people happy. And that needs to occur before you start doing the magnificent things with the cloud technology. And I think that's, people are hindered right now. The number one hindrance in people moving into the cloud is they can't find the people to help them. And so they end up hiring consultants, very expensive to do that. And even the consultants may not have the talent for you just because they're finding the same shortages in the marketplace. And so it's the asset that you need to secure before you start moving into the cloud. And if you don't have the skills in place, you're not going to be successful. So just figure out how to get the skills in place, but give yourself enough time and allocate enough budget to do it. People underestimate that stuff all the time. And you're going to be in for a penny, in for a pound. Either you're going to do cloud correctly and hire the right skills and pay for the skills that you need, or you're going to try to penny ante your way through it, and it's just not going to work, and you end up wasting that money.
Very valid point. Like, you know, a strategy like we'll figure it along the way would not work here unless you have the right talent with you before starting. Cool. Now, in the book, in the later half of the book, you also talk about insider's perspective of future of cloud computing. So can you give a sneak peek of what you foresee that is coming down the line for the cloud computing?
Yeah, and I've talked about this a great deal. I think that we're no longer moving to cloud computing as our end state destination for everything. If you talk to, probably not me, I don't think I ever had this opinion, but you talk to the thought leaders back in 2000 and 2011, they would tell you that this is the destination for everything. We're going to shut down our data centers and we're going to move to these centralized processes that exist in the cloud. And we're going to use everything as a utility service, and that's where it's going to go. And you saw businesses out there that would tell you we're cloud only. In other words, we're only moving to cloud. That's the only platforms we're going to enable. That's gone out the window. And so the future cloud is going to be ubiquitous computing, heterogeneous computing, where we're leveraging whatever platform we need to leverage that's going to bring back the most value to the business. That's a concept. So That means a mix of modern on-premise systems, in some instances, edge-based systems. It means we're going to leverage co-location providers as well to provide some of this infrastructure. And that's basically data center real estate you rent. We're going to leverage managed service providers, which I think are under-leveraged, or people who basically maintain these systems for you, even systems in the cloud. And you're outsourcing a lot of that problem to people who know how to do it professionally, and then stuff in the cloud. And I think that we are going to continue to migrate into the cloud. Certainly, most of the AI stuff isn't going to exist in the cloud. We just saw the numbers from the cloud providers now. They're growing like crazy because of AI. But we're not going to move to an all-cloud world. We're not going to move to an all-on-premise world, an all-edge world. It's never going to be an extreme. It's going to be ubiquitous computing, heterogeneity, leveraging all kinds of different platforms. We have to have the connectivity in between these things. Now we have 5G, ubiquitous networking that goes with the ubiquitous computing, and also the ability to leverage existing assets to more of a benefit for the business. I mean, the computer I'm talking to you right now, I'm just looking at the processor saturation. It's at 5%. Okay. Why can't I rent this out, you know, as available processing to occur either in my house or even in a team of people? So they're able to find it and use it securely. And therefore, I'm already paying for the power for this thing. So they're leveraging the power, leveraging the stuff. So it has a huge sustainability benefit. That's an extreme example. But the moving to mobile computing, edge computing, moving things out to any kind of number of different platforms and the ability to manage them on that point is where we're moving to. And I think that's going to be the end state of all this. It's never going to be moving to all cloud. I don't think it ever was going to move to all cloud. I always saw a saturation point at about 60, 70% where lots of applications were uneconomically viable to move to the cloud. So we need to keep them where they are. So that's the future. I mean, I wish I could say we're moving to this platform and this AI. That's not the case. We're moving to a complex, heterogeneous environment that we need to figure out how to manage better than we can today.
No, very insightful. And frankly, the book end-to-end that I have read is more insightful than many of the books that I have read. So thank you so much for writing this book. It was really a great read for me, and I recommend everyone to have a look. Even if you are working with cloud or not working with cloud, you will find it equally insightful just to understand the trends and understand what you should be looking for. So David, where can the readers or the audience find your book?
Anywhere fine books are sold. Amazon's obviously the pick that everybody uses.
Awesome. And where can audience go to know more about you?
LinkedIn is probably the best place. I have a YouTube channel now that's about 30 days old called The Cloud Insider. And hence from the book, I have about almost 10,000 subscribers now. So come subscribe. InfoWorld blog, I've had that blog for 12 years. Also my classes on LinkedIn Learning. There's probably 72 classes out there in all kinds of different languages. I just released a generative AI architecture course with Go Cloud Careers, and it's available in May, but you can pre-order, move there now. And that's kind of a cool course because it's a long form course. It's 40 hours long, and there's going to be office hours where I show up once a week and help architects and give them problems and they're able to solve things. So it's more of a hands-on guide you through it experience. I'm excited about that. I think that's a better way to teach architecture.
Awesome. I love the energy that you have in everything that you do. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You got it. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the GoTo Podcast. Head over to gotopia.tech to discover lots more content from the brightest minds in software development.